The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
To the Business of the Business podcast. I'm your co-host, JP Jabas from the Two Man Power Trip. Of course, joining me is the financial wrestling genius himself, the doctor, Mr. Lavi Margo. Lavi, how are you doing today, sir?
Hey, John. No weeks off for Thanksgiving. We keep plugging along. And to start out tonight, we have a special guest. I don't know about you, John, but my high school principal was like 75 years old, long beard, no sense of humor. I have no idea what his interests were, but like if somebody in Staten Island is a wrestling fan or loves Star Wars, they're the luckiest kid in the world. Because tonight we have Principal Mr. Mark Erlenwine, the principal of Staten Island Technical High School. Mark, welcome.
Thank you, Lavi. Thank you, John. Such a pleasure. What a great way to go into the last day of school before the Thanksgiving break. So, and of course, you know, this is typically Survivor Series week. Survivor Series would be 48 hours from now, usually, but of course, it's this weekend. So, thanks for having me.
No problem. Gotta love the Thanksgiving tradition of Survivor Series. You gotta love that.
Very, very fond childhood memories going back to when it was one of the four pillar events that you'd wait for. And it's funny because being somebody who always kind of, you know, as the podcast is named, the business of the business, I was always wondered that I had to be tough being one of those performers with talent, not really having the holidays like they kind of do now, way back when for all those years. You could always finish your Thanksgiving meal and then hop on to the pay-per-view and that would be Thanksgiving, but a little different these days.
Definitely. So where did you grow up? You mentioned being an old school fan. Where did you grow up and how did you get into the wrestling business? How did you become a fan?
My earliest memory is I grew up in Brooklyn, New York in Bensonhurst in 1974. But my earliest memories of wrestling was 78, 79. So about 4 or 5 years old. I'll never forget watching then WWF Championship Wrestling, WWOR-TV. Only be on at midnights on Saturday. And I'll vividly never forget Afa and Sika tearing into a piece of raw fish on the television. And that just left me awestruck. Like, what is this? What is this TV show that I've been missing my whole life, my short life at that time? And then from there on, my dad saw that I was just infatuated with watching wrestling then. So he started taking me to all the MSG events every month. And back then, I mean, you know, my childhood, I guess, hero growing up in the wrestling world was Bret Hart. Before Bret Hart, it was Bob Backlund. So just going to the Garden, there it is. And thank you, Lavi, for wearing that shirt today. I mean, and John, for sharing that poster before. It's such a throwback. But those are my fondest and most earliest childhood memories. Growing up in Brooklyn, New York, there it is.
Yes, bring back one.
Going to the Garden month after month, and finally remember my dad hoist me up on his shoulders, and we'd wait outside of the Garden after the event. Arnold Skolin would come out the back, followed by Backlund in a three-piece suit. And if you were a boy, young boy lucky enough to rub Backlund's crew-cut hair time after time, like that was just, you know, growing up in the late 70s and just having the opportunity to have seen Backlund versus superstar Billy Graham and all the legends of that time, and Hulk Hogan at different times too. He fought Hulk Hogan about three different times pre-80s before we knew of what we know as Hulkamania then. you know, getting to see Backlund lose to the Sheik, being present for Superfly Jimmy Snuka jumping off the top cage onto Don Morocco. That's how I grew up. And Bensonhurst, Brooklyn, during those days, WWF used to work very closely with the local promoters. And once again, not knowing why, but I just had kind of an affinity for, like, who are these people running these shows? Even as a five-year-old, I'll never forget that the promoter's name was Tommy D in the Bensonhurst area. And he'd run all the local shows with WWF talent. So wrestling was just totally accessible in New York at that time. And I remember going to our Lady Queen of Peace in Bensonhurst, Brooklyn. And at this point now, Wrestling Challenge was on Saturday mornings in the early 80s. And when Tony Atlas and Rocky Johnson beat the Wild Samoans for the tag team belts, I'll never forget calling my friend Frank Nantali up on the phone, just screaming that they won, that they beat the Wild Samoans for the tag team championships. And just from there on in, just wrestling, it was all about wrestling growing up. My friends and I lived for every pay-per-view. Anyone who had cable TV back then, if you had it, we had to watch a lot of closed circuit television until cable TV became prevalent. But that's where it all started for me. Just was infatuated from that first program, watching the Samoans chow down a piece of raw fish, tearing it to shreds. And then and kind of funny now, all those years later, look who's at the top of the food chain, pun intended, with Roman Reigns, right?
Isn't that crazy? More things change, the more they stay the same.
So true. So true. Those are the earliest memories I have that kind of ignited this lifelong passion of mine.
Did you ever think about getting into the business or the schooling, becoming a teacher and that direction? Did that kind of was your calling?
Yeah, no, it's funny because eventually I moved to Staten Island. I went to Staten Island Technical High School. That was the school I attended as a high school student. And I graduated and went to college at SUNY Albany. And my kind of goal at that point was, like, I didn't want to physically be a wrestler, but I sure was interested in the business of wrestling and especially the creative side. So at that point in the early 90s, WWF at the time was constantly up and down the Northeast Coast. So in upstate New York, I can go to a show in this very small gymnasium that would rightfully be an MSG, like Undertaker versus Yokozuna was the main event. The who's who of wrestling at that time were extremely accessible in smaller venues. They were still doing smaller venues in addition to the larger venues, especially in Albany, the capital of New York. But I would literally and purposely stand by looking for people with name tags on. And I'd follow the WWF workers back kind of to the backstage areas of these different venues until I could find somebody with a creative title. And you might remember the guy named Jim Miranda. Jim Miranda used to be in charge of all the merchandising especially back in the Attitude Era. He's passed away since. But I just kind of walked up to him. And this was before the internet was brand new. You couldn't find out or figure out who these people were by doing an internet search. There was barely an internet in 1992. So you had to do it the old fashioned way of just kind of hawking down people, getting to know them. And I just struck up a conversation with Jim one day and told him what I was interested in learning. And from event to event to event, we got to know each other by first name. And then he started telling me, hey, Mark, we taped a couple of weeks of episodes back yesterday. And this is when they would fill up and sell only half an arena. They sell half an arena back then and only film in one direction to make sure that the whole entire arena looked like it was sold out. They would pre-record the boos and the cheers so they could edit them in after the fact. It was kind of interesting if you've ever been to one back then. But getting to know him, he'd spend about a half an hour at me at each of the events. I still have his card to this day with the several phone numbers at the old Stanford headquarters. And he promised me, he said, call me next summer, get you an internship. And the next summer is when the very first sex scandal broke and the steroid scandal broke with Hogan and everybody there. And unfortunately, the sex scandal involved some of the ring boys and things of that nature. So there was no, needless to say, there were no internships going to happen from that point forward for probably a couple of years. But yeah, so John, that was my, I did figure out a way to meet somebody in that part of the business. He was very friendly, willing to share his trajectory, starting as a person who set up the ring, the person who was a referee for a while, to the person that, you know, Stone Cold Steve Austin mentions in many of his old podcasts. Is, you know, he's called him Jimmy Miranda, the guy who would constantly bring new designs and ideas back to the office for the next and latest t-shirt that was going to be the hot seller. But it went cold after that. I mean, there was really no way to communicate with those people again unless you kind of found them physically. Yeah, these weren't people who were in their offices that often, but I tried, and I always do use that story with the students, that back when there was no internet, back when there was no LinkedIn, if you really wanted something, you had to figure it out and just use those speaking skills.
So is anybody in your school and anybody shocked that you're such a big wrestling fan, like as far as maybe even students or maybe even fellow teachers?
So when I came back in 1997, I was hired as a science teacher and an English teacher. And this was 97, so it was the height of the Attitude Era. Not so much now. High school students don't seem to be your wrestling fan demographic now. The younger kids tend to be. But back then in 97, you know, everyone watched wrestling. Everyone was, you know, chopping everybody.
Definitely. Yep.
And if you knew the code, right, if you could decode that and knew what students meant by things that they said, things that they did, and the shirts that we were wearing, you were in on it. So my students knew of my fandom very, very much so instantly. I didn't hide it. I didn't hide wearing my shirts. I didn't hide the fact that I watched Monday Night Raw at that time, then SmackDown at one point, and I would share the stories every Tuesday, the day after Monday night. And that time, I guess SmackDown was on Friday, so we'd always catch up on Mondays about SmackDown. And I had a really great relationship with the students and got to know their parents pretty well too, to the point where they trusted me to take some of them, that those that I got to know really well, that this had to be a special bunch of kids, take them to the wrestling shows. Yeah, and funny enough, of all the WWF shows that were around that time, you know, the ones that we actually wound up going to all together were some the ECW shows in Philly, believe it or not. And a shout out to, you know, Adam McCauley and Eric Hoff, two students to this day, we still stay in touch. I consider them friends of mine. We went to the last two ECW shows together at the Hammerstein Ballroom. Like, that's a very fond memory, and I'll never forget.
Awesome.
We all stood there at the right after the Rob Van Dam Rhino match. It came to a conclusion, and we're just waiting there. Okay, something else is going to happen. This can't be it. Something surprising is going to emerge at the end of this. And as we know, nothing did. You know, we just all kind of stood there with every other fan at the Hammerstein that night, dumbfounded that this was really it. But we kind of got to close that era together as a group of wrestling fans who now to this day, what's really cool is then they were barely 18. And now I see them. I saw them together with their boys at SummerSlam this past summer in Jersey. Nice. So here you have three generations removed of wrestling fans, you know, teacher, student, now teacher, former students growing up with their own children. You know, my wife, Stacy, and son, Mark Jr., are also wrestling fanatics too. So it's a intergenerational process here. But that was kind of my in ticket with the kids, just being a wrestling fan and not being afraid to admit it. But it is kind of sad now. I don't see the boys and the girls in those teenage years sporting, you know, those shirts or outwardly showing their fandom like they used to. But I did figure something out in terms of how I could make that emerge, which I'll share with you in a few minutes.
They'll send it over to Lavi and he'll get those answers.
Yeah. So I'm like taking notes here because there's so much like interconnectivity. I attended those last two Hammerstein shows for ECW. They were only two of three ECW shows that I ever went to. The third was at Westchester County Center, which was amazing. That was, I think, the first one that I went to. And then, of course, those last two shows. I don't remember what happened, but my ticket for the final show says that it was comped. So I don't remember, like, how did I get a free ticket? I remember talking to Gabe Sapolsky, who now has blocked me on X for but for other reasons. But, like, I just don't recall that. But I do remember it, like, being amazing, but also sad too, because you did know the end was coming and there was just going to be like those final sold shows in the deep South, something like that. What was the reaction of the high schoolers at the time? Were they ECW watchers?
It was pretty amazing because they had really had a diverse, I guess you could say, round of taste. You know, some of them did watch WCW. Of course, WWF at the time. The Attitude Era was unmistakably just must see. And finding any way and every way to incorporate things that The Rock was saying. When Stone Cold started the whole what thing, it was torturous to try to get through a chemistry lesson. It was Sterling Wine. What? Yeah. Electron dot structure of oxygen. What? it's just a bad joke gone worse, but always.
I don't even think wrestling still recovered from. I think only recently did wrestling recover from that. I don't think like the current generation knows anything about that. But everything.
Try teaching chemistry when you got a bunch of wrestling kids who are just obsessed, shouting that out at you. But what was funny, like, you know, I've always was kind of known to be a collector. My office now, I think I sent a picture of to you guys of my office. My office kind of looks like a toy store. And if you can imagine back then when the wrestling figures were still gaining notoriety and popularity, not kind of like you could buy so many different brands and types now. But yeah, having these wrestling figures in your classroom, hanging, thinking about it, like, these are basically men and women in their bikinis and underwear, barely clad in clothing as wrestling figures. Now, if you aren't a wrestling fan and you walk into your teacher's classroom and you see these figures, half clothed characters, it didn't hit quite as it does the same today. And especially if you didn't know who these characters were, it kind of didn't make sense. When you think about it, I can see why some people might look at it, what's that? But I was just fortunate that it was a way to connect with students, and it was an easy way to connect with students. And I was also an English rhetoric teacher. So when you think about how intricate the wrestling product is from a spectacle standpoint, from the music, from the theming, there were so many elements to kind of steal from, to bring into the classroom setting, to make it exciting for the kids, right? So it was just another easy way of bringing, it was pop culture when you think about it now. But now flash forward to 2013 when I became principal, wrestling was, I always credit wrestling with being super influential for two things. Yeah. How I present the school and some of the curriculum that we actually ask the students, that we mandate the kids to actually take part in. Like, for example, back in 2013, got rid of those annoying, monotonous bells that start and end each of our classes, if you recall. Nothing worse than that sound. Only second to probably the alarm clock buzzer in the morning. But we changed, bought a system that would allow me to play music themes in between the classes. And especially back then, 2013, I think kids are still a little bit more into wrestling then. So I was in charge of creating the theme, the playlists. We had nine periods. So you'd have 9 unique different songs playing each day. And I'd always test the kids out to see, let's see who the wrestling fans are. I slip in a Walls of Jericho. I slip in a Stone, especially on 316 day. You know, 316 day, you play Austin's song, you know, most of the day as the beginning to your class. Now, I'm a big rock fan, music fan, so I'd interplay different wrestlers' theme music along with some rock songs. And you definitely get a rise out of some of the students. But then, you know, school, unfortunately, in education, school sometimes unintentionally feels, instead of unifying, right, unitive, it feels punitive to kids. So we really have to work harder at making it can't miss, making school can't miss, making it kind of a magical experience. So that's kind of what I've become known for over the years. In 2022, I was recognized the New York State Principal of the Year, partially because of the things that we were doing and I was asking our faculty to do at the school. So a big thing is just the theming. You walk into our school, depending upon the different times of the year, it's completely just decked out in decorations, huge inflatables, wrestling memorabilia, characters, the music welcomes the students into each period. We even installed Disney and certain hotels have these aerators that they purposely install into their ventilation systems to put out certain smells. So we'd make it a very visceral visual experience, an auditory experience. Yeah, the different smells that would kind of like we purposely pump in popcorn or waffles and pancake smells, things that just make kids happy. And then on the holidays, it's just all about what can we do to make learning a spectacle. So purposely installing smoke machines, snow machines. The kids really never know what's going to happen next. And it kind of becomes an expectation. And that I can only blame that on wrestling. Like that, I grew up looking forward to what was going to surprise me, what was going to happen in the next episode. So that was kind of like one of the my when I'm asked, like, what was influential to you as a school leader in making this special, making what's special about your school special, and whatever that feel is. And wrestling definitely is at fault and is responsible for a lot of that. So, I call it making school can't miss school.
So, Mark, we know you have to have tried this. I don't know if you achieved it, but you have to have been one of seen those videos where the principal has a match and goes through a table or falls off a ladder. How close were you to booking an indie show where you're in the main event for your school?
Oh, man, love, you're good, man. You're good. I went as far as to WrestlePro in Rahway, New Jersey. Pat Buck's company with Kevin Matthews. Yeah, they do bought shows. And it was always my dream, right, to have a wrestling match, a wrestling show in the center of the football field, an outdoor event, and especially feature our school mascot, which is the Seagull, and one of our rival school's mascots, and some sort of special match. And then, of course, each of us take our mascot masks off, and it's the principals of the two schools. There is another principal on Staten Island who's a big wrestling fan, David Cugini at Wagner High School. And unfortunately, the amount of insurance that the New York City public school system requires to bring an organization like that into your premises was absorbent. And even WrestlePro didn't have that level of it's like a $10 million rider or something like that. I'm like, they don't have that.
Okay, Mark, so. I came up with an idea. If it doesn't work, it wasn't my idea. The Staten Island Ferry. You're in the open seat.
Oh,
you know they have like the subway wrestling, a flash wrestling event on the open seas. No one's responsible. There you go.
Right. Very interesting. Unfortunately, the New York Post will have a field day with me, regardless of if we're on international waters or not. But it's funny because the other two things that completely stole from the tenets of wrestling. What's the most important thing in wrestling? And I think it's you both have interviewed a lot of different talent whom I think in the past have accredited their time as a wrestler or in front of a camera and performing absolutely prepare them for other careers where they had to be able to perform and sell something. So at our school at Staten Island Tech, every ninth grader has to take a TV studio production class in the ninth grade. They don't have a choice. It's mandatory. And the goal is to teach them storytelling. They have to be able to tell a story in front of the camera or behind the camera. So we have a multi-million dollar TV studio there. So they have to learn how to operate every piece of equipment, audio, video, and run the control room. That's over the course of the year. And then as an advanced student, if they're really taken by this, we have an episodic TV early morning show called The Early Bird. We produce 180 episodes a year, films at 8:15 every morning, has a bunch of pre-tapes that we have to splice in. So students are mandated to learn that skill set because, as we know, in life, you're going to have to tell your story in some way, shape, or form, and the medium for that is video. The second class they all have to take, and you'll love this, is called Talknology. Not technology, it's a Talknology course, and it teaches oracy skills and soft skills. And it's based upon a friend of mine's curriculum. His name's Bob Hope, Bob Wolf Hope of Hope Skills. And we teach them first impression, interpersonal communication, presentation, and selling skills. And not the type of selling that you guys are thinking of. the idea of being able to effectively communicate and sell an idea, kind of like promo class. You know, so the kids have mandatory promo class and have to learn how to tell stories using video as a medium. And you know, once again, I just attribute a lot of that rub off from, you know, what are those things as you get to know the business or learn about the behind the scenes of the business. Some of the most effective and successful of the performers transition into other medium because of that experience as pro wrestlers, having to sell something, having to sell seats to a show, and being able to articulate and communicate. So, you know, so much of that, and it's funny because I can't call it promo school for the kids now because they won't know what that means. They understand when I say Talknology, but for my former younger students who are like in their 40s now, if I call it the promo school, they get what that's kind of how I describe it to them. It's kind of like promo school for the kids. So they learn these soft skills and these communication skills.
So Mark, before I turn over to John, I have a two-parter, not necessarily related, but a two-parter. One is just to give us insight, like you mentioned, on like why kids, maybe high schoolers aren't as into wrestling now. And part two, I want you to cut a promo on a kid that's been fooling around, that has to get things straight. They have to graduate. The type of promo that you can't do as a principal, but you would do if you were a wrestling principal in the business.
Okay. I'm going to try my best. So part one to that question again.
I know that's a lot. Part one is what you mentioned you were going to talk about, like insight into why teenagers aren't that into wrestling now.
I think the biggest thing that's changed from the late 90s to the early 2000s is just the amount of content that's out there. I mean, there was a time I really feel that if you were into video games, kind of combat sports, you know, the Marvel Universe, the DC Universe wasn't prominent yet. So the hero, anti-hero, good guys, bad guys, that whole trope. Wrestling, especially in the Attitude Era, going into the early 2000s, maybe-ish, that was it. Like that was that little micro universe that students kind of relate to. that's where you can kind of find your bad guys and your good guys episodically on a regular basis. And then let's think about it. If you wanted to meet them, you can go meet them. You can go to an arena to see them. Now, I just think there's so much noise in terms of and options for students in terms of what's entertaining and what's entertainment. You don't have to watch an outlandish episode of Monday Night Raw or whatever wrestling product you watch to be surprised or capture one's attention and imagination. And that's the unfortunate part. There's just so much. You talk about cutting a promo on a kid who's not following instructions, or just the most common thing I have to talk to kids about sometimes, I ask them, it's like, you just made this horrible mistake. You posted something terrible on social media. And there's a nexus to something that may have happened in the news. And some of our most well-known politicians or movie stars or celebrities kind of did the same thing not too long ago that these students are making the same mistake at. And you're like, haven't you seen the news lately that these people making these royal mistakes? And they're like, no, I don't watch the news. We don't watch the same things our children watch. So there's a complete disconnect in terms of what's cool, what's uncool, what's relative. So it's kind of sad because your only chance of really kind of being exposed to wrestling now to some degree is if maybe your family, your father, your mom, your siblings, your cousins had an affinity for it. I guess thank God for John Cena these past 25 years, because that's kind of been a bridge to probably why they milked this for a whole year for his retirement, to kind of pull back in that wrestling fan base, that wrestling fan base's children, you know? That's the only thing I can think of, because what else is different except the fact that there's a whole lot of other things to watch?
Okay, Mark, I'm going to throw it to you. I'm going to be the kid in your office and you get me in line. All right?
Oh man, you're gonna make me cut a promo on you, huh, Lavi?
Principal Erlenwine, I only care about TikTok, and I wanted to share what happened to me last night when I went out, getting some fast food. I don't care about grades. Stop bothering me.
Stop bothering you, Lavi. Bob, do you remember when you were a ninth grader? Well, let me ask you one a little bit better. Do you remember when you were an eighth grader and you were at open house? And there I was on the Staten Island Tech stage. Do you remember what I was wearing that day? I was wearing an R2-D2 suit. Yes, that was meant to get your attention, right? To get your attention. And I did, because somehow you came to my school and chose Staten Island Tech to be the place you spend the next 4 years. And here you are. Once again, your teacher brings you to me, because you haven't done your homework. And you know what our logo is in this building. You know our mantra, Staten Island Tech, where we blur the lines between high school, college, career, and life. But you don't want to listen to your teacher. So instead of paying attention, you know what you're going to do? You're going to pay a tutor. You pay attention or you pay a tutor, Lavi. Does your mom and dad have to pay a tuition every month to go to Staten Island Tech? What? No. What? No. Right. So from now on, moving forward, we're going to pay attention. So mom and dad don't have to pay a what, Lavi?
Tuition.
A tutor. Thank you, Lavi. That's the best I got for that right now.
That was
Lavi.
Impressive. Usually I just say, let me tell you something.
Okay. So you're so for our homecoming, that was kind of pathetic, I have to say. For homecoming this past last year, we were facing a Brooklyn football team, and we were pre-shooting this for our early morning show. I have to send it to you. You get a kick out of it. And I wrestling brand everything in our school. So Staten Island Tech has Staten Island Techomania. The students are my little texters or my techomaniacs. Right. And I cut a promo as Hulk Hogan. I had this shirt on underneath another shirt. And of course, I did the whole, the ear thing. I finished with the what you're going to do when Techomania runs wild on you. Tear the shirt off. And there's my Techomania shirt underneath that. Now, of course, in light of kind of running with that for these past couple of years, you know, Hulk Hogan's kind of become synonymous these past 2 years with the whole political arena. And it kind of put a buzzkill on using the whole Techomania intellectual property as part of our branding. But I still wear it. I do Techomania for everything I have. But R. Siegel wears the Hulk Hogan banner, has the Hulk Hogan arms and such. But in a pre-tape with a little bit of planning, I will cut the Hulkamania promo around the Staten Island Tech kind of iconography and stuff like that.
Mark, have no fear. John still believes in Hulkamania. Let me turn it over to John.
Yes, I definitely do. So where can everybody kind of find and follow you as far as your socials and all that fun stuff?
Yeah, so my website, markerlandwine.com, is a fun place to kind of go to. It has a lot of my articles that I write on education, you know, from a fun standpoint. One of my recent articles called Testamania, Running Wild, is about how it shows a picture of a Scantron form wrestling up against a PB project-based learning unit, kind of a take on the idea of getting rid of traditional testing and doing more fun stuff like project-based learning and makerspace stuff. So markerlandwine.com. I am on X under @erlandwine. I am on Instagram on @merlandwine. Pretty easy to find. Most notably been known for kind of citywide and countrywide now around artificial intelligence and talking quite a bit these days about AI and the impacts on education. And I use absolutely every instance I can to throw in some wrestling humor and wrestling references along the way, which always garners a bit of a smile and a heckle.
Nice. Love it. Mark, thank you so much for all time tonight. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you both for having me. I really can't thank you enough for inviting me on, and I really hope you guys have a very happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, thank you. Mark. See you soon.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Take care, gentlemen.
Bye.
All right, Lobby, let's get to the news of the week here. I know you had some analysis. What is America's best drawing wrestling brands?
You know, what's interesting is like with a holiday week, I'm like, let's get ambitious. You know, there won't be too much news. And then there's always news anyway. So,
of course.
What's an interesting thing, especially as the year is winding down, is sort of like, what are the best drawing brands, not necessarily companies, brands for pro wrestling? And I think the first few we can probably sort out pretty easily, right? Like pretty clearly, WWE PLEs are number one. Then Raw, SmackDown, I believe last year used to outdraw Raw because, especially when it was on broadcast TV, just because, you know, it was higher profile. But Raw has really taken the lead on that. But after SmackDown are, I would say, AEW pay-per-views. WWE Holiday, you know, it's really only a few days, so I don't know if you would count that. And like European tours is not in the U.S., of course. And they don't really do super shows anymore, so we could probably throw that out the window. So then this is where things start getting interesting, because like the second half of the list. So in terms of wrestling draws, so I would say Dynamite, then TNA pay-per-views, even if it's listed as 7,800 or whatever, but it's really 5,500. NXT PLEs, Collision, the limited New Japan house shows that they do here in the U.S., NXT touring house shows and not the Florida Loop, TNA tapings, and then the occasional independent super show, like a big House of Glory or NEW show. Just in terms of a little bit of perspective here, Collision has been drawing a little bit under 2,000, and Dynamite has been drawing a little bit over 3,000. So under the same category tonight, so the NXT shows that we have from WrestleTix that have an attendance is 21 shows for a total of 44,504 and a 21-20 average. And now we're going to get more numbers regularly, especially next year if they do this once a month, have these three basically house shows. They have upcoming, of course, in Greensboro, in Columbia, and in Macon. So that'll be interesting to see what happens mid-month in December. Now, in terms of TNA's drawing power for the year, we just have 15 shows that had a number, which was 34,456, 2461 average. So a little bit of a higher average than NXT, but there's certainly those outlier shows as well to consider. But what's ahead of us in terms of TNA? So you have El Paso, 1794 the first night, 1115 the second night. That picked up a ton since last time, 537 tickets distributed. And then 933 for the third night, which also picked up a ton, which is an interesting thing to consider. We know Genesis will be in Texas in January, but still waiting on those numbers. So any other color that we need on this analysis, John?
No, I think that's good. I was kind of wanting to get into, I'm obviously kind of tying a little bit TNA, a little bit NXT. I wanted to talk about AAA. It seems like there's huge news coming out of AAA right now.
Yeah, so really interesting in terms of Fox Mexico. So Playbook, which covers sports, at least in Mexico, possibly Latin America more broadly, they've interviewed AAA executives before. But they had a little bit of a take on things. Fox adds AAA and reinforces its sports commitment in Mexico, a multi-year agreement to broadcast Lucha Libre AAA, including Triple Mania and premium live events. The alliance consolidates Fox as one of the most complete sports categories in the country. AAA's content will be available on Fox, which is a pay TV station in Mexico, Tubi, and Fox One. And I think this would all be geolocated, expanding the reach of Mexican wrestling in Mexico, Central and South America. Voices like Rey Mysterio celebrate the deal, highlight its potential. But why is it important? AAA enters a multi-platform ecosystem that maximizes distribution and monetization. I could hear like Roman Glazer's voice in my head as he's emphasized those things so well on the show and in articles before. Fox strengthens its strategy in Mexico after acquiring Caliente TV and adding soccer, baseball, and motorsports rights. Wrestling, one of the most powerful cultural products in the country, becomes a key asset to attract young audiences. AVOD plus pay plus SVOD combo allows for hybrid revenue models and greater business depth. Competition for premium domestic content in the sports rights wars accelerating. So I haven't had it's breaking news as of today. I haven't had a chance to analyze it further, meaning that I believe AAA has aired on some like over-the-air stations, basically network TV, right, in Mexico before. I have to look into that some more. So I think it's kind of a trade-off. Well, I don't know if it's done so recently, right, but it's kind of a trade-off of exposure and monetization. When you think about it, it's like, oh, well, of course, Fox. But once you get international, or at least outside the U.S. and Canada, you'll start seeing distribution partners that like surprise you. Like, one wrestling company can air on another station where you'd associate more with like AEW in the U.S., but here WWE is airing in whatever country. So you have that sort of thing. How did you take the news, John?
Kind of surprising. Thought that kind of, but maybe long overdue as well, but a little surprising. And the timing of it was a little surprising.
Yeah, that's true. I guess around the holidays, but I don't think they celebrate Thanksgiving in Mexico, but we're waiting on that on the TNA deal news. Yes. So really curious about it moving forward.
So as far as New Japan Pro Wrestling is concerned, what is the latest with New Jersey? Has there been any update or any movement in this New Jersey show as far as ticket sale?
35 tickets sold. John, were two attributable to you, or that's still up in the air for you?
Up in the air still. Okay. Still up in the air. February is like a weird month, just weather-wise. You're always kind of uncertain of what the heck's going on in February.
Yeah, I feel like in December, I mean, it just might be remembering it more than it was, but like I feel like Final Battle, it snowed more than it didn't, you know, at the Hammerstein Ballroom. So
yes,
that'll be funny. It happens again for AEW, although I don't think it was last year. So that's basically the New Japan news at the moment. 832 tickets distributed. The setup is 2783. It's quite a large venue.
Yeah.
8576 on the map, but I think even potentially more, but maybe that's right. At the Cure Insurance Arena in Trenton. I'm kind of not sure why they're doing this now. I know that we had them as like number six draw or whatever, but you kind of need a draw to make this work, and hopefully they'll have something intriguing to bulk that up as they get closer.
Speaking of New Jersey, what about GC Dub? What's going on with Game Changer?
So Atticus Coker is the new GCW World Champion. A really nice run by Effie since January. So kudos to Effie. Atticus, I think, you know, obviously I'm not day-to-day or watching as closely the performers on the independent scene, but Atticus is like a really creepy standout performer, meaning like in a good way, like he really, whoever he is personally, like as a character, like he's very hateable and like seems very real, and it's kind of like refreshing in that way. So maybe it was time for a change. Maybe it wasn't. I don't know. So when you say them all, like there's a certain assumption. Okay, like we saw that whole like escalator last time, but they were in a smaller part this year. It may have been where the like arena football championships was at a certain point. I'm sure there's a lot of different options, but based on the picture, I'm thinking that's possible. But I think in the end, you know, they did well with lower expectations. As we always talk about, it's harder to do something new the second time, right? Like if that's the main draw. But looking at their schedule ahead as we run through it, December 5th in Washington Hall, front row tickets still available. Defy recently packed out Washington Hall he wasn't the draw, but you know, we'll talk about it at the end. Sting's son having his like first official match, of course. December 6th in LA. At the moment, they just had fourth row available, which is probably gone as we're talking about it. It was just one ticket. I think there's the room to expand that. Nick Gage Invitational in December 13th. Second row tickets still available. New Year's Extravaganza in the Mecca in New Jersey. Have you ever been there, John?
No, actually, I have never.
Yeah, it's a really popular venue for a while. I think, unfortunately and tragically, I don't think it was related, but like, I think that was where somebody died, right? Like a wrestler. And then like, maybe they took a break from a little while. Like, you know, there's all these independent shows, but it picked back up again. I hope I'm correct in terms of the information. But December 31st, I guess people are waiting for their New Year's plan because there's 10 or more tickets left in the front row. January 3rd, we've talked about it. One night only, they tend to do well in terms of death matches and branding. That seems like a smart way to go. I just couldn't see them running the Hammerstein this year, or next year, I guess, right, to be precise. Then, of course, we have Dallas, Wichita, Harris, Philadelphia, the Melrose Ballroom is the collaborative show. The White Eagle Double Shots, February 6th and 7th, is with their sub-brand as well. Jersey Championship Wrestling, back to LA, February 14th, February 15th, Mesa, Arizona, March 6th, to be announced, which would Columbus would followed by Chicago.
Now, how about the world of the NWA, where we have a new NWA World Heavyweight Champion, Silas Mason? What is going on with NWA?
Yeah, so not too much in terms of the main brand, but they'll be doing a taping on December 13th in Tampa, but they have all their sub brands, or I guess affiliates or territories, right, would be most precise, based on NWA talk, which I haven't been following as much, but in terms of the main brand, there's just that taping.
What about MLW? What about Don Gato Tequila? What's going on with them?
Yeah, so something to follow, and MLW, for a promotion that doesn't run that many shows, they cancel a lot, right? Like, and that's hard. Like, right, they had moved this Chicago show, and then they took the date in South Carolina. And now this show, January 10th, in Dallas, was it said rescheduled, but they're giving everyone their money back, so it's canceled, and then they'll have to book it again. I feel like it happens when they book more than one show a month. Maybe that's contractual, but I think you can, if that's related, I think you could plan that a little bit better. In Florida, the old Battle Riot gimmick, January 29th, February 7th in Chicago, and just announced March 14th, they're in Atlanta in Center Stage and presented by Don Gato Tequila. So I don't know if every show will be, but seems like a good, solid sponsor moving forward and the type of support that they would need.
Any news on Triller? I know you love Triller.
Yeah, so I was kind of leaving it alone for a while, but hitting some new lows in terms of stock price. I think it was as low as 33 cents on the day we were recording this. When the market closed, it was just under 37 cents or about 37 cents, which was down 11%. The market cap is 64 million, but they keep getting letters about delisting for this and that. So I'm not sure, when the NASDAQ will pull the trigger on all these, but looks like they're in trouble. And unfortunately, there's the whole wrestling ecosystem tied to Triller, tongue twister. So we'll have to see what happens.
Now, what is going on? You mentioned Stephen Borden, a.k.a. Sting Jr. What is going on with him? I know he's making, I guess we were talking about how he kind of made his debut already, but I guess this would be his official debut, Steve Borden Jr.
Yeah, I mean, in wrestling, like, you have to be pretty flexible about, like, where you debut. So, like, he wrestled at an art show, but it was a wrestling match. I would consider that the debut, but
yeah,
here
me
is,
too.
Like, sort of like, Bam Bam Bigelow, right, when he wrestled his debut at Studio 54. That was his debut, right? So
yeah.
So here, but at Defy, obviously, it makes a lot of sense given his trainer and all that sort of thing. What's good is that the internet chatter, I didn't get to look for the match or anything like that, but people don't seem to be, like, overly critical. Like, they're giving him a chance to learn and develop, even though it's in the public eye. I was trying to figure out, like, his age about.
I'd say 31 or 32 because he graduated college in 2015.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. So about that, because he has – is his brother a couple years younger?
I think his brother's older, isn't he?
Oh, okay. All right. So just about wrong, that. Yeah. So I think, like, you know, sometimes people say, like, with wrestling that it's – it's late to start or whatever, but I think careers last a lot longer and the bodies hold up differently. So and then once I posted this story, did you see the thing about Psycho Sid's kid?
Yeah, he's a big boy, huh? Gunner, I think. Gunner Eady?
Yeah. So I think was it his brother that was like did like a tag match with Sid like 10 to 15 maybe not 10 years ago or something. I feel like there was something like that where maybe he even had the mask, like, you know, when Sid debuted, he had that Lord Humongous type of mask. So I don't think it was Gunner, because Gunner seems like a lot younger. I think there's at least two brothers. But he looks like a big kid. He looks like Sid. He has the blonde curly hair, so I'm totally psyched, you know, like, not to put too much pressure on, but he's already calling himself Two Psycho, which is a great name. So looking forward to that. I guess it just speaks to second generation, and we've seen obviously the highest of highs with that, but I think it's hard when you come in with, like, so much momentum. Like, what do you think about, like, Nick Hogan starting to talk
about. Right. Yeah, he's even thinking about it. Man, you're never going to, you know, reach that heights. You know what I mean? Even like David Flair, like there was no hopes of you, you know, you reaching that. It's just too much pressure. You're never, it's almost like it's too much. You got to be able to handle it. You're never going to reach those heights. It's just crazy. It's fun to do and think about, but it just like pressure wise, man, that can be a lot of pressure.
Yeah. Especially when you're doing it, like you already have like a social media presence or whatever. Like, I think when Charlotte Flair did it, like no one really knew who she was before she went to training, and like we got reports in the newsletters, but like no one was like sort of like following her so closely. But obviously with David Flair, like he was really pushed out there and never had a chance to develop.
I think like different too for a female too. You know what I mean? Because when it's Flair's son, you have such crazy expectations. Daughter, you're like, oh, this is fun. Like, you know, let's see how. And then she's awesome. So you're like, oh, this, you know, this is great. So I feel like less pressure was on Charlotte.
Yeah, and even in Smash's book, recently his son, I remember when he was like in developmental, but it was like very quick, and you had Vader's son sort of lasted a couple years in developmental. It's hard, like especially if they don't have, I mean, it'd be hard to have like Vader's body type or whatever, like, right? Like if it's not the same thing, it seems like a lot of times that the kids tend to be smaller. I mean, and not those two examples, but like, obviously the bodies are different, you know, at this rate. And also like once you begin, you know, you mature and get older and get bigger. So there's like that expectation right away that it's like the same person. And, you know, it's not like when has it, I mean, in sports, you do see it obviously with like Ken Griffey and Ken Griffey Jr. And whatever. Like, it seems like with athletes
Barry Bonds. Yep.
Yeah. That you're just like more apt to do that. Obviously Kobe Bryant, his father was a professional European player and whatever, but like it seems like it's even harder sometimes in wrestling, even though that they want you to succeed, but maybe the pressure.
Yeah, like it's fun that you think about it, right? Like obviously Bret Hart, Mr. Perfect, Dustin Rhodes, but then like after that, were the kids as good? Maybe a Randy Orton is a perfect example, but he's 46 years old, so he's even like the past generation. So guys after him, I don't know if they tend to not succeed as well, to be honest. You know what I mean? It's hard.
Yeah, I think it's hard, especially in the social media and video sharing era. Like if you could get them in like before they have like that presence and the pressure. And I know it's hard for them to resist, right? Because you want to be like, hey, you know, I'm here and start making money or whatever. Yep. But like to get them in, test them out, see if it's for them and if it's a fit before like all that pressure starts.
Very true. All right, Lavi, let's wrap this bad boy up. Head towards the plugs. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Two Man Power Trip. How about you?
Follow me on X, Lavi Marg, LAVIEMARG. Check out the long-form articles on linecubjobsearch.com and join the LinkedIn group, The Business of the Business.
Thank you, everybody out there, for tuning in. We'll be here right back next week for a little business of the business. See you next week, folks. This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You can check us out on Facebook. You can subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPT Empire to become a patron. And also check out the website TMPTEmpire.com and buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother. Three, two, one, hep. Happy New Year from our friends over at Manscaped. The ball has officially dropped, but that doesn't mean you have to drop the ball on your balls in 2023. Whether you had a New Year's kiss or not, the leaders in below-the-waist grooming have you covered for your much-needed resolution of bringing sexy back. Join the 7 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped. With our exclusive offer, go to manscaped.com and use the promo code BIZ, B-I-Z, for 20% off and free shipping. Let us have a toast for a new year, new you, and a new you with no pubes. If you really want to make 2023 the year to remember, make sure to try out Manscaped's wet goods as well. This includes the Ultra Premium Body Wash 2-in-1 Shampoo and Body Deodorant. These products are absolute perfect for follow-up after your New Year's gym sessions. Cheers to new balls in 2023. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code BIZ at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the promo code BIZ, B-I-Z. Time to feel sexy and free this 2023 with Manscaped.
It's here, the Omaha Steaks Cyber Sale. We're talking 50% off site-wide and an extra 20% off select packages. There's no better time to shop for everyone on your list. And when you shop omahasteaks.com today, you'll get an additional $35 off with code HOLIDAYGIFT at checkout. With Omaha Steaks, you can slay your gift list and send a perfect assortment that everyone will love. USDA certified tender steaks, beefy burgers, premium air chilled chicken, decadent desserts, and so much more. There's something for everyone on your list. And every bite is backed by their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Don't wait. Shop the Cyber Sale now at omahasteaks.com to save 50% site-wide and an extra 20% off select packages. Plus, get an extra $35 off with code HOLIDAYGIFT at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, code HOLIDAYGIFT. Hurry, sale ends December 2nd. Terms apply. See site for details.